We are here with the Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report. It's Thursday live at 1 o'clock. Today's episode is sponsored by Cane 5. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit cane5.com.
Thank you, Heather. So, like we said, here in Brooklyn, sitting with the very tan, well-rested, and good-looking Ben Flanner, urban farmer extraordinaire. Ben, we're excited to hear about your first season at the Brooklyn Grange, your rooftop farm in Queens. How's it been?
It's a good season.
Yeah?
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's great to have you back in studio. Heather, when was the last time we had Ben on? Do you know?
Probably right before the summer, right before their Kickstarter campaign was about to finish up. I just kind of, you know, wanted to give that last shout out. And
back when I was on the Farm Report.
Campaign.
Boo-hoo.
Oh, Jack.
Oh, wow. Well, hey, the Kickstarter campaign worked. So that was the last time we had you on.
Yes, it did. I feel like we were just in the midst of scrambling, trying to get everything solidified. And then you guys were helping us kind of plug it and keep the momentum going. So.
Yeah, how much money did you end up raising?
On Kickstarter, we raised $21,000.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
No joke.
Did I say that?
You did.
I did say that.
That was awesome. It came at the crucial time, too, because it was right when we had some gaps in our funding and we were still just going ahead with the project.
Yeah, soil was being delivered or something,
right?
Yeah,
I know. It was kind of fearlessly just going forward with it. So everybody really came in the clutch for it.
Did you apply for some like new credit cards just in case? Or, I mean...
to put debt on it.
Like, I'd like an extension on this line. I need 20,000 pounds of dirt.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
So well, can you tell us a little bit like what, you know, you got the space. What was the stuff you needed? Like, what's the gear? What's the stuff look like to set up a full acre rooftop farm?
Sure. Well, we got the space, and luckily there wasn't a lot that we had to do with the roof itself. It was in pretty good shape, and the landlord was in the process of patching up just a couple small little leaks on it. So then our expenses were the green roof system, which is four layers, which involve protecting the roof with a roof barrier and absorbing water and keeping the soil out of it, and then all the soil. And the soil is probably in the realm of about twice as much as the green roof system. So really the soil is the big thing. But we actually got a great deal on the soil. We didn't have to pay the second half of the bill until 3 months into the summer.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
It was enabled us to, you know, to sort of stabilize everything. And
how, like, did they, the soil people do that for you for like a specific reason?
Yeah, it was just good relationship with him, and he had faith in us and vice versa, and he agreed to it for us.
Yeah, now when you build your next rooftop, you'll go back to him.
Yeah, so exactly.
He's just as confident as we all were that you'd make this happen. I know it.
Yep.
Definitely. Cool.
The soil worked well, too. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, so the soil, that's like a one-time purchase, right? Or
yes.
You're not buying that every year?
Oh, no. No.
Thank
no.
God.
You buy that once and get it up there, and then you start running it as, you know, circular and organically as possible. We're doing a lot of composting. We're bringing up scraps from the CSAs in Sunnyside and Long Island City farmers markets everywhere around us. And restaurants are bringing some stuff up. We're getting coffee chaff from Oslo from the roaster in Williamsburg.
Mm, nice.
And we're getting wood scrap, sawdust, and wood shavings from woodworkers.
So, like, what were some of, like, the most, like, interesting things that, you know, kind of went on there this summer? I mean, you know, aside from just your everyday, you know, like, work.
Sure. Well, we were up there. We were hustling pretty hard because we didn't get everything up till late May. Irrigation was even set up till early June. And that's, as you know, that's, like, into the summer, basically. You're approaching the longest day of the year already, which is June 21st, June 20th. So we were in a rush. We were getting everything down, throwing down seeds really quickly, and we had over 2,000 tomato plants, which we transplanted in.
Whoa.
Just in the nick of time. And that was like the big thing of the summer. 25% of the area of the farm was tomatoes, and we were at one point in August, early September, we were coming up there. We were getting like 200 pounds a day.
Oh wow!
And that takes some time to pick too. So. Again, sort of a thanks to everybody, the community, and everything. We had people stopping by, and we'd just be like, "Hey, can you pick tomatoes?" And they'd fill up flats of them, and
that's awesome.
We'd sort them into quality.
Yeah. So, what? Tell us a little bit about what your crew looked like. I mean, it wasn't just you up there on the acre. Who else is around?
Sure. Full time, it was myself and Rob, my apprentice and partner in the Grange, And then we had the rest of our team, Gwen and Anastasia, both had different roles, helping with errands, with volunteer days, with harvesting and with markets. And Chris and Brandon, we all had different roles. But full-time up there was Rob and I, and then a slew of regulars and randoms that would pop in to help us.
When you say full-time, I mean, what time does your day start? We heard you were like running a little ragged at some point this summer.
I was a little ragged. The day started, well, during the peak of everything, the day started as soon as it was light. You know, we were trying to be up there slightly before it was light. Jeez. Just so we could
you didn't
start
sleep
picking
on the roof?
Things. We tried harvesting at night once, didn't work that much. No, we didn't sleep in the roof, but actually we joked about it all summer,
I'm
and I'm
sure.
surprised we never did it.
Me too.
Because we were pretty dang close. But yeah, at one point in the summer, like through August, September, when you're trying to make sure you're getting everything picked and everything sold, and that's like when, you know, the curve is double or triple the amount of stuff that's coming out, you're just working as many hours as you possibly can. Just remembering that once it cools down, then you have time again on your hands.
That you rest. So mm-hmm. you're up on top of the roof, you know, harvesting hundreds of pounds of vegetables. Are you just hauling those down the steps? Is there like an elevator? You have like a pulley system?
I was imagining a pulley system in my head.
Yeah, pulley would be awesome. There's an elevator. There's a freight elevator and a regular passenger elevator that goes to the fifth floor. And that's so high. The building's six stories high. We're on like the seventh floor, uh-oh, theoretically on the roof. So we'd have to carry it down two and then throw it into the freight elevator.
Okay, so that takes some of the heavy lifting out, I suppose.
Yeah, a little bit, definitely.
So then you guys load it onto a truck? What are the other kind of on the ground parts of the farm?
Sure. The distribution was actually a big chunk of the time this summer because we had to make sure everything got sold and we were developing a lot of new relationships with different people and we were focusing on markets, but markets still weren't quite as large or substantial as we needed them to be to like sell, you know, all the produce or really a large amount of it. So we were loading up my car. I picked up a 79 Mercedes converted to veggie oil.
Nice.
And so I was tooling around a lot of that and Gwen's truck and Rob's car. We were kind of using whatever we had. Bicycle when we could, although our scale quickly got, you know, eclipsed that. And then some people would come to pick it up from us. And then we also had a market in the lobby of the building twice a week. So then people would always come straight to us. That was awesome. I'd love to get that as large as possible. Because it's like the ultimate in what we're trying to accomplish. It's like people work in the building or they're there visiting or they get out the subway a half block away. They pop in just right on their way home. They don't even break stride and then they get their fresh vegetables that were picked that morning.
What is the building? What else is going on in there?
It's called the Standard Motor Products Building. It's on Northern Boulevard and 39th Street in Long Island City. And they have a number of different tenants. Standard Motor, who owned the building for years, still has like two floors. There's some architects, there's some finance people, there's some artists, Jim Henson Corporation. It's kind of hodgepodge. It's like kind of your classic like equivalent of a 70s Soho loft kind of conversion, you know, where they have all this space and they partition it and rent it out to people as they can fill it up.
So are there already like people? Well, hey, I mean, why not? Every rooftop should have a farm, pretty much. So,
yeah.
But like, are there people like already signed up now? You know, for next year, that they know they already want to buy produce from you guys?
Yeah, totally. We started to get regulars and people coming by that had favorite products and everything. So yeah, it'll make everything a lot easier next year. And we also had the market right here at Roberta's on Sundays, which was pretty awesome. We really got a lot of people from the neighborhood coming out regularly and made a lot of friends out there on the sidewalk.
So awesome. You guys were growing tomatoes. What's your production look like? Did you get a sense of how much produce you guys were able to produce? And then like what types of things were you growing?
Yeah, I think we probably grew about 15,000 pounds of produce, with tomatoes as the lion's share of that. We had pretty much everything across the gambit besides that, some of it in small proportions too. Like we had lemon sorrel, we had Swiss chard, lots of kale, lots of spinach.
Anything that you won't grow next year that you grew this year?
I might not grow. We probably won't grow any. We tested melons again and probably won't do any more melons. I think we're going to put hops in that location. There's a couple places that are perfect for trellising. Cool. That face to the south so you can get a strong sun on them. hops is a good perennial and it's fun and it's fun to talk about. Definitely. And you can make beer with it.
So. Yeah, and you got to branch out, totally.
Yeah, totally.
And I mean, first time I ever met you, gave me an edible flower. What about any of those?
Oh, what was that, a nasturtium?
Yeah, I believe
so.
Oh,
cool. Yeah, we grew some nasturtiums this year. We grew a lot more borage, which is really fun. Tastes like a cucumber. It's a pretty blue flower. Actually, those are really doing well right now. They're enjoying this high 50s, low 60s that we have. And
it's crazy. But yeah, we wanted to ask, I mean, now that the summer's over, I mean, what goes on in the winter? You guys are still, you know, paying rent, I'm sure. So what happens in this time of year?
Sure. We have the farm pretty much cover cropped right now. We threw down rye, hairy vetch, sweet clover, crimson clover, and barley. Just filling up all the beds. There's a couple patches that aren't fully covered right now. We started undersowing, it's called, back in August, where we'd actually throw it late August. We started throwing the seeds down below the tomatoes, like in between them. So then they germinate, they start growing. Then in the process, the tomatoes start to thin out. You clip those out, and then you have something that's a month older that saw some strong growing season. And the purpose of those cover crops is to prevent erosion. We the root structures prevent, you know, keep the soil intact, and then we'll also turn them into the soil in spring. We call it a green manure. It's sort of a natural fertilization, and we can restore some nitrogen and some other minerals and nutrients to the soil. The rest of it will compost.
So you talked about, you know, some of the stuff you're getting for compost. What are there other inputs for your farmers? Is there other stuff that you guys have to buy in?
No, not currently. We're going to try to avoid that as much as possible. I think the first thing I would buy, if it comes to it, would be like a concentrated fish emulsion. Hmm. And then we can put that through the drip lines, through the irrigation system, and just add a little bit to it. But in general, we're trying to keep it as circular as possible because we have access to all this waste in the city, mm-hmm. which, you know, for every bit of waste that we can get up to the farm efficiently, that's not getting trucked out of the city, it's not being put in a landfill or sent up to Albany or wherever it goes, or Pennsylvania. So we're trying to focus on that as much as possible.
That's pretty sweet. It's really good to hear as well. I mean, so someone's got to be up there every day, right? I'm assuming you have people there every day, I mean, or not?
Yeah, all through the summer. Right now, we're not up there any day, every day.
Any day.
Not up there all day, every day. We have times to do radio shows and stuff like
that's
that.
That's awesome.
Of that nature.
Yeah, and I mean, I know you've been speaking on lots of panels and, you know, just kind of out there, just spreading the word about urban agriculture and things of the like, so...
Yeah.
I mean, I know we always talked about this kind of being a model. I mean, have there been a lot of people reaching out to you to kind of see how the season went or to see, you know, interest for other projects? Yeah,
definitely. There's been a lot of people asking us questions and coming and, you know, kind of kicking the tires and asking us questions about the financial side of it. You know, they're really anxious to watch us and prove that it's financially feasible. And a lot of landlords have been coming to us with
cool
buildings and roofs. So, yeah, I think we're going to have an interesting couple of years ahead of us.
Definitely.
But, yeah, and then we're all at the same time just out there trying to spread the word and keep up the momentum.
Who do you look to? I mean, I'm assuming you didn't grow up on a rooftop farm. So, like, where did you kind of learn how to do what you're doing? And who might you kind of look to for advice when you're struggling with something?
Yeah, I have a network of farmers that I can call up on the phone when problems come up, and it's actually fun. It's often you end up triangulating, but the more I realize is that there's like not like one single solution to lots of different problems. There's lots of different ideas. You can check out blogs. I have several books. Elliot Coleman's definitely someone that I've really loved reading. He's a kind of famous farmer now up in Maine. He's very methodical. He's very like logical about things, and I've really enjoyed his books. And then, you know, self-taught, making mistakes, learning from it. Oh. Every year there's like a list, you know, like certain crops got killed by flea beetles or whatever, and you just fight through it, you replant, you just keep moving. And
yeah, I know, like Wendell Berry has that great essay about, you know, farmers planting their winter crops. You know, you're inside, it's cold out, and in your head you're like planning out the season and where you're going to put things, mm-hmm. and how it's going to flow. So I mean, we had a lot of crazy weather this summer. That's not something you can really plan for. I mean, what did that look like for you guys when the torrential downpour
and tornadoes and all that fun stuff? Oh, man.
Definitely. And then prior to that was just that massive heat.
Hot, yeah.
And we got a little bit lucky. And in some ways, there's some slight blessing in the fact that we were late, because by that point, we could already tell it was going to be a hot summer. So we tilted our crops a little bit more towards peppers and eggplants and tomatoes, obviously, which I'll just love the heat. But then the rainstorm, the tornado came through. We escaped relatively undamaged from
That's
it,
great.
But we had to use a lot of bamboo.
Okay, cool.
All right, let's hear a little bit more about that. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Ben Flanner of the Brooklyn Grange.
Cool.
Brooklyn Grange live with us in studio on today's Farm Report.
Hey, let's go.
So we're kind of talking about like, you know, the really hot summer before we went to break, and you know, some of the challenges that came along with that. And I was kind of wondering before the show, talking to Erin, what some of the differences may be, you know, being up on the roof as opposed to on the ground, like challenge wise. Are there differences? I mean, was there anything you ran into that you kind of never had before because of being up there so high?
Yeah, I think there's two main differences. One is with the height, it's windy. It's breezy, and there's more windy days than calm days, for sure. So we ended up using quite a bit of bamboo, like I was just touching on. We bought probably 3,000 bamboo stakes, and they were interspersed throughout almost every crop. We started to realize just it's worth putting a stake next to it, even just to support its stem in case there's a big kick up in wind.
Wait, so I'm... There, you put a stick of bamboo in, and what I'm not.
It provides a little bit of support for it.
Okay.
And the idea is, even if the wind wouldn't kill the plant, you want to minimize the stress that's applied to it. You know, say it gets breezy and the stem might bend a little bit, or it might flip around. They actually flip around in almost like a full 360 sometimes, because the leaves are kind of like little mini kites. If the breeze hits it at the right way, it can spin around. So just having a piece of bamboo there, maybe with a small piece of twine attached to the stem, it can help it a lot. So that's one thing that I think is a little different from farming at the ground level, just the fact that there's a little bit more wind. I'm sure there's some farms that are just as windy as our roof at ground level, but in general, I'd say they're probably a little less breezy. Hmm. And then the depth of the soil as well. There's a couple crops that don't seem to work quite as well that really want to have deep roots, corn being an obvious example that has like a 6-foot root system that is just a little bit too constricted. To grow it on our style of roof, we'd have to fertilize it pretty heavily.
It's okay. I think we have enough corn right now.
Yeah, I think we're doing all right on corn.
We're trying to keep it diverse.
No
so.
Big loss there.
Any plans for animals?
We've been discussing the idea of chickens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Chickens on the roof.
Like laying hens or meat birds?
Laying hens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that would be the way to go.
Definitely. What about bees?
Bees. Yeah, we have one bee box, and we will have several more next year.
Cool.
I'm not sure how many more, but enough to have some more substantial amounts of honey.
Yeah, I mean, what and like also, were there any crops that, like, you know, you're saying you were like harvesting 200 pounds of tomatoes a day? I mean, were you able to sell all of that? I mean, what were you doing with some of the things? I mean, were there any things that you weren't able to sell at the end of the day?
Yeah, what did you eat too much of this summer?
Surplus.
I always had plenty of dandelion greens to take home and eat.
could have
been nightly. Those they grew really, really well.
Yeah,
and we had a fair amount of square footage of them. And then the only other really time when a little bit went to waste was early in the spring, when it's just really easy to grow greens and salad mixes, and we had a bit of a surplus of lettuces and salad mixes. But aside from that, we were pretty much hitting a steady state where most things got sold.
Cool. So I know I ran into you, I think it was last February, you were heading up to the NOFA, the Northeast Organic Food Conference.
Yeah, with June.
Yeah, with June Russell.
Nice.
The farm inspector for Grow NYC, who we had on a few weeks ago. Grain Week still happening.
Yeah. I believe you were making a cassoulet.
I was.
Bacon and rice.
Lots of beans. Yeah. So how was your interaction? Like, how do you see urban farmers and rural farmers kind of sharing some of the same issues or not? I mean, you went to that conference kind of to what did you get out of it? What did you learn? Or like, what do you see as some of the opportunities for partnerships between urban and rural farmers?
Mm-hmm. I think, well, NOFA's awesome. I always have a great time up there, especially if you can trap somebody for a beer that's been you know, farming for 40 years, who survived the 80s and the 90s when it was, I think, even possibly even more difficult to be a small organic farmer than it is now. And so, you know, you just pick up little things. You go to the conferences or the workshops on pest prevention and pick up some little idea on how to deal with flea beetles or whatever. And then, you know, in terms of partnerships, I think we're all in general working for the same thing, which is to encourage people to eat food that's grown within, you know, within the state, within the region, rather than getting food that's coming from, you know, halfway across the world or even all the way across the country. So I heard a stat from somebody that, you know, that still only less than like 3-4% of produce consumed in the city is local or regional. Hmm. And that number could really grow by a lot. You know, so I think that's really the common goal that we're sharing. And then also just general sustainability. A lot of the farmers up there at the NOFA conference are really taking care of their earth, and they're growing smartly, and they're not pumping a ton of fertilizers. They're not pumping any pesticides into it. And that's the way to do it.
Cool. Yeah. One of the issues we talk a lot about, I think, on the show is farmland preservation and making sure that people have access to growing food. So in the city, I mean, how was it to find your roof, and are there kind of policy or zoning issues that you wish there was like someone out there working on that would make it easier for more people to grow food in an urban environment?
Mm-hmm. There are. And actually people are working on it right now. Last month there was a introduction proposed in the council, and a hearing involved and people given a chance to speak and provide written testimony to it. And they're trying to create tighter distinctions of what constitutes a vegetative or a vegetable growing green roof, which has a large part to do with our project. Basically, we want to make sure that the standards are created logically and not too loose, but we don't want to make them too tight either. So certain logical, maybe an innovation comes up and it becomes excluded from the language or something like that. Mm-hmm. So we're working pretty closely with the council on...
That's the city council?
Yeah.
Awesome.
That's great.
I'm working on that, and that'll be great. And then at the same time, the Department of Buildings, they like to have structure and in their work. So rather than, you know, sort of solve a problem for the first time, you know, when new roofs pop up, then they want to have like some structure, some rules written down on what this constitutes, what needs to be checked off, and then how to, you know, sign it off and say sounds good.
Yeah, because I think you mentioned like there were like four things you needed for your green roof earlier. Mm-hmm. So where was that guideline? Like where did that come from?
It's not really in the books right now for exactly what we did. So that was more of that industry best practice, and that kind of goes along into the policy, like to speak and communicate with a lot of people that are creating green roofs. You know, the Germans have been doing it for 20 years, and to learn a lot of the learnings that have already been done to make sure that it's a appropriate policy.
All right.
So you guys have, you've been lucky. I feel like I see the Brooklyn Grange all over the place. You've gotten tons of, it feels like anyway, maybe it's just the stuff I'm reading, you've gotten a lot of media attention. And I mean, do you guys see the media as like a useful tool for you or something? I mean, when you have stuff going on, getting the word out, or what role do you think kind of they could be playing or are playing in promoting food growth?
Sure. I think the media hasn't been our primary focus. The primary focus has just been on quality vegetables and sales and developing good relationships with people that we work with. However, the media is also important, obviously. And I think they can be important, as well as all the people that we work with. You know, spreading the word and word of mouth and so forth. But they can be important and just and also spreading that word. And like I said, whatever the percentage is of people that are eating, you know, really responsibly grown produce in the city, it's a tiny percent. And that's kind of the ultimate goal with a project like this, to increase that. And also just to, you know, we're doing something positive. It has environmental positive impacts and positive impacts, and that the food that we're producing isn't transported a long ways. And there's a lot of room for more farms like this in the city. So so I think the media can help us with that, just with creating an impression that's a positive project.
Definitely. What's the subway stop that you guys are near, in case people don't even realize they're walking past you every day?
It's the 36th Street stop on the R or the M train.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's like right there at the building.
Awesome.
And who is it? Who is it that you guys are selling to? Who's buying your stuff? Are you selling to just kind of direct to consumer? Are you selling to restaurants? What are some of the outlets that you guys are making use of?
About a little less than half of our sales were to our farmers markets, and we had at one point we had 5 farmers markets going per week. That we started them all from scratch, except for the Brooklyn Flea, which we jumped into for a few weeks. So there's some existing foot traffic over there. We had 2 at the building itself, and then we had 1 here at Roberta's on Sundays, which I think I already mentioned. Yeah. We had 1 at Vesta, which is a friend's restaurant in Astoria. And then we had 1 at the Brooklyn Fleet.
So we're going to get you in Manhattan now.
Fort Greene. Yeah, maybe. Maybe
that,
not.
Is that really hard to do?
Maybe not. Yeah, yeah. We'll see. Okay. I think it's... we'd go to Manhattan if there was a really efficient place to have a lot of people coming, so we could just really like fill up big trucks and get them over there. But otherwise, I think it makes more sense to keep it a little bit closer to the farm in general.
Okay.
And then the other half of our outlets were restaurants, and Roberto's was a large purchaser. Marlo and Sons, Marlo and Daughters, the Brooklyn Kitchen, Juliet on Bedford Street, Bobo in Manhattan, Vesta in Astoria. There's a lot of different restaurants.
Thanks to all you guys for supporting
Fatty
the range.
Fatty Q was a great purchaser. Cabrito in the West Village. We still do a lot of different fun restaurants.
Awesome. So, like, what's next? I mean, what's going on, like, this summer? Anything exciting, like, that you're looking forward to? Like, when do you get started again, like, you know, rallying up the volunteers and really getting up there? And, like, when does the big workload start again?
We'll start to our seedlings in early March. That's when we'll throw in most of the tomatoes, eggplant, peppers, and then within a few weeks of that, some kale and Swiss chard. And we'll start looking at the beds and tilling in the cover crops and giving those a couple of weeks to die off. And then we'll probably start putting in some sugar snap peas and radishes in March, late March.
Awesome. What are you going to do over the winter? Do you have any vacations planned? I mean, how are you going to regroup, re-energize?
Hibernate.
just take it easy a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Less activity, but there's still a lot to do, you know, with our first year. That you forget the other half of it, which is the books and figuring it. We had to work with the accountant to get some things straightened out and figure out our taxes and all that jazz. That'll all happen in the next month or two. And then I have a couple books I want to read. I'll be back at the NOFA conference. There's some interesting growing going on in California, which I'd love to check out and go visit some contacts that I've made out there, particularly with salad greens. So, yeah, the list never really stops.
Awesome. Great. Well, thanks so much for coming in today, Ben.
Yeah, this is pretty sweet, honestly, to, you know, get you in here before, you know, this was all, you know, up there and going, and to hear about it and to have it be a success. Congratulations. And, you know, thanks for coming back. And we'll bring you back again and continue to hear about all the good things Brooklyn Greenwich has going on. So if you guys ever need to check it out, what's your website to get in touch with you guys?
It's brooklyngrangefarm.com.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and thanks to Heritage for all the help with
always
it, getting it going.
No problem. All right, we'll be back next week live at 1 o'clock with the Heritage Radio Network's Farm Report.
You know, I think I'm going to actually eat some turkey next week.
All
I'm going
right,
to take a
we
break.
We will not be here next week. The week after. All right.